اللطيف الخبير المعز المنعم ذو الأسماء الحسنى، ولا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، له الملك وله الحمد، يبدي ويميت وبيده الخير وهو على كل شيء قدير. أستغفرك ربي وأتوب إليك إنك أنت التواب الرحيم. أستغفرك ربي وأتوب إليك إنك أنت التواب الرحيم. ونحمد الله ونستغفره ونستعينه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يهدي الله فهو المهتد ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. Brothers, sisters, we start with our sincere prayers to Allah and our taslim on Muhammad, النبي الخاتم الأمين, the Prophet Muhammad, the last of the prophets, وعلى آله وأصحابه الميامين, and the family of the Prophet, the most blessed, and his companions, the most honorable. وعلى من اتبعه بإحسان إلى يوم الدين. And we supplicate to Allah to grant the divine blessings upon all those who follow the straight path from now till the end of times. When Allah commanded the Muslim Ummah to abandon business and trade, to abandon the pragmatic affairs of life and head to supplicate and pray and praise and celebrate the bounty, the ni'mah of Islam in every Friday. إذا نودي على الصلاة من يوم الجمعة فسعوا إلى ذكر الله. To come together to supplicate and remember and praise and recommit, not as individuals, as I'm sure all of you know, that the Quranic command to remember the divine was not addressed to individuals but addressed to the Muslim community. The Muslim community is to come one week, one day a week, in Yawm al-Jum'ah, and to have a khutbah that the Prophet ﷺ has strictly instructed must be meaningful and substantive and substantial. If you look at the extensive writings of our scholars who have studied and commented on the seerah of the Prophet ﷺ and the practice of the companions and the practice of the successors, time and time and time again, they say that the purpose of Salat al-Jum'ah, the purpose of Khutbah al-Jum'ah, or is for the Muslim Ummah, wherever that Jum'ah is held, for that particular Ummah, to review, in our language, its report card, to look at the concerns and issues and problems and challenges of the Ummah. Jum'ah is not where you learn your religion, because of course people who have never as much as read a single book of fiqh on what is Jum'ah and what its purpose is, well, as you Muslims often do, just pontificate and gesticulate, I invented that word, guess, about what Jum'ah is and what they think it should be, and they of course have no clue about what the Sunnah and the vast commentaries of the Quran have said about Jum'ah. For the Muslim Ummah to take an accounting of its concerns, its burdens, its worries, its challenges, and its trajectory forward. Jum'ah is not about teaching people their religion. You're not taught how to do Salah at Jum'ah or how to do your Sum at Jum'ah. There are halaqat at dars, there are classes for that. And brothers and sisters, when I think about what confronts us and what weighs on us, in no more than 20 minutes, or within those 20 minutes that occupy the Jum'ah, I must think about all the issues that deserve and warrant our reflection. Because there are issues that define the challenges that confront Muslims and also define Muslims for many decades to come. Brothers and sisters, do I talk about the millions of Rohingyas that are being exterminated under the guise of re-education in China? The Uyghurs. Do I talk about the Rohingyas that not only have suffered a genocide that is as brutal as you can imagine, but as a law professor who handles political asylum cases, thousands of those Rohingyas have escaped the hell of persecution in Myanmar only to end up in huge concentration camps in various Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia. One of the worst human rights reports came out just last week about the condition of the Rohingyas detained in Saudi Arabia. Do I talk about Jerusalem and the hundreds of Palestinians who are unarmed and shot every day and killed, and all of us go on with our lives because we have abandoned Jerusalem and left it to the Palestinians to struggle over and die? And at the time that Al-Quds, Jerusalem, has been stolen from us, do I talk about the so-called Egyptian scholars who are coming out with books like Yusuf Zidane to tell us, no, you know, Al-Quds is not the one in Jerusalem. Al-Quds was a little mosque in Arabia. And so when Isra wal Mi'raj, the Prophet ﷺ, he had his Mi'raj to a little mosque in Arabia, and that's the real Quds. So, you know, basically he's telling you, forget Jerusalem thing. Do I talk about the fact that in the midst of the consistent and persistent and unhampered slaughtering of Palestinians, that the minister of whatever from Israel is received with great fanfare and celebration in the Emirat, and that Netanyahu is received with great fanfare and celebration in Oman, and that Saudi bought the most advanced spying equipment built by the Israelis for $250 million. So all Muslims around the world seem to, at this historical moment, forget what Jerusalem is to our identity and soul. Mark my words. Muslims without Jerusalem have no soul. You have no ummah, you have no civilization, you have no future. Do I talk about the heartbreak of my Muslim brothers and sisters that are being starved to death in Yemen? As we go around filling our stomachs, I see the images and I read the reports of Muslims like us, of our millah and our deen, being systematically killed and starved to death. وَلَا حَيَاةَ لِمَنْ تُنَادِي, no one cares. Do I talk about the Syrians and the enormous, horrendous, unbelievable violence inflicted upon them by their own government? Do I talk about the Libyans who a CIA agent that used to live in the United States, someone who, if you actually read books, was identified long before the Liberal Revolution as is the CIA man who is supported by the Emirates, Saudi, and Egypt, and the US, and is sent back to Libya to make sure that Libya never establishes a democracy. And America's man, Egypt's man, Saudi's man, the Emirates' man, Haftar, commits incredible massacres and sheds an incredible amount of bloodshed. I can talk about all of that. But I don't need to, because it is in the core of your heart. All of us are hurt. Are hurt. Because Muslim blood is flowing without reserve, and Muslim blood is flowing at the hands of fellow Muslims. The Quran tells us if you kill one human being, it's as if you've killed humanity. Then how many times has humanity been killed over and over and over in the lands of Islam? In the midst of all of this, what truly injures my spirit is the image and the moral lesson that Islam is supposed to stand for. Our children, brothers and sisters, when they see this mess, they think Muslims are losers and they don't want to associate with Islam. The evangelical missionary group that failed during colonialism is active now in Muslim countries that more active than it was in the colonial period. And we sit oblivious. In the midst of this, my dear brothers and sisters, last khutbah I stood here, I talked about how Allah has promised that who tortures people, that Allah has vowed to torture this person. In our faith, brothers and sisters, the Prophet once was passing alayhi salatu wasalam and saw some children pelting a bird. Not only was he angry, but he educated these children that pelting a bird, harassing a bird, is kabira from minak kabir. When we know that a prostitute that saved the life of a dog has been promised heaven by Allah, when we know that a woman that tortured a cat, starved her to death, was promised hellfire by Allah, when we know that Allah has made it very clear, if you kill one human being, you've killed all of humanity, the spirit of humanity, then as Muslims, how am I supposed to deal with the fact that someone like Kamal Khashoggi goes to a place where he should be safe and secure, only to be tortured and killed? All of you know that those of us who dare have a political position cannot dare step foot in the consulates of the countries they come from. I don't dare step foot in the Egyptian consulate. I dare not step foot in Mecca or Medina, because I know that even if I try to go to Umrah or Hajj, I will never reemerge. Brothers and sisters, this is not Islam. This vilification and corruption of what Islam is by people who are megalomaniacal and power-hungry despots cannot stand. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم أسأل الله يستجب. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على محمد خاتم النبيين. Allah has taught us very simply. The qura that are zalima, the unjust qura, Allah has vowed those communities and nations that have not learned justice and not committed to justice, that Allah will punish it, وَأَخْذُهُ أَلِيمٌ شَدِيدٌ, and punish it in the most profound and thorough fashion. Look at zulm. What, in the midst of all of this, how can it be that non-Muslims are the highest voice that expressing outrage at what happened to someone like Kamal Khashoggi? But maybe as Muslims, we've simply been stunned into silence because there are so many Kamal Khashoggis left and right. Just as I speak, I was looking at reports about a bunch of Egyptians who just tweeted a condemnation of what happened to Kamal Khashoggi, only to be arrested last week by Amn al-Dawla, and they've all disappeared. In the midst of this, when someone like Al-Ghamisi, the famous Imam who often leads prayer in Haramain, stands there and tells us, even if the ruler appears on TV for half an hour each day fornicating in public, that's Al-Ghamisi, you owe him nothing but obedience. What do I do when a Sudais, Imam al-Haramain, stands on the member of Rasul alayhi wasalam, the podium of the Prophet, and says, you cannot even think ill thoughts about your ruler because the crown prince is divinely inspired, mulham, muhaddas. By the way, muhaddas was the word used by the Prophet ﷺ to describe Umar ibn al-Khattab. And in Muslim history, no one has dared use that word, muhaddas, to describe another Muslim until these days. When Imam al-Haramain basically tells us that we should shut our mouths, silence our ears, basically cover our mouth and ears and eyes, and say, yes, Tal Umrak, we obey, we don't second guess you. This is not Islam. This is zulm. Zulm. How can we as Muslims continue on our blissful way when our brothers and sisters are marred in zulm? In the midst of this, who goes to speak to defend Salman, Crown Prince Salman, Netanyahu and Sisi? Sisi, one of the most bloody despots that the Muslim world has ever seen, and Netanyahu, the president of Israel. Some of you might have seen the video in which an Israeli spokesman on behalf of the military calls upon Muslims to remember the valuable teachings of Muhammad bin Abdul Wahhab, and to realize that the path of the future is with Salman and not Turkey and not anyone else that opposes Salman. I don't care about Salman. What I care about is justice. Justice. I care about what Muslims stand for. Because all of us will stand before Allah, and Allah will say, what have you made of my religion? اللهم استغفرك واتوب اليك اللهم اعف عنا وارحمنا واهدنا لاقرب من هذا رشدا اللهم لا تكلنا الى انفسنا اللهم رد غضبك عنا يا الله انصر الاسلام واعز المسلمين وارفع بفضلك كلمه الحق والدين الله we supplicate to you and beg you guidance and forgiveness. Allah, give us the insight to stand by justice and not to deform and deface your beautiful face with acts of injustice. Give us the strength to defy those who defame your faith and your religion. For all of us will stand before Allah, where we will have to account fully for what we have done in this life. Okay, Mr. Allah.